This is an In It For The Kicks special feature.
The man, BK, he is a name synonymous in the world of hard house, almost single-handedly revolutionising the popularity of the genre in the late 90s and through the early 2000s as one of the main engineers at Nucleus Records, producing hundreds of dance floor hits and remixing for every artist in the A-League. I sat down with BK to get the story behind those huge records. What I'd love to know straight off the bat is kind of the BK story. A lot of people will probably know, especially your hard house side of stuff at Nucleus Records, but it began, I understand, a lot earlier than that. And when you were quite young, what age did you start getting into music production?
I started to work in a record shop when I left school, with always the intention of wanting to work sort of in a studio or somewhere within that environment. And at a young age at school in the UK, there were loads of illegal raves being put on everywhere, and a friend of mine at school, who was the year above me, was one of these people putting on some of these parties. And at the age of 17, if you think how much this lineup would cost now, he booked The Prodigy, Carl Cox, Shades of Rhythm, and this enormous lineup, which back then wasn't so expensive. And his very first party, he had 8,000 people turn up to a warehouse in East London at the age of 17. And that was something that I used to go to regularly. But watching the DJs, I was always more interested in how the music, you know, got onto that piece of vinyl. And I always, although I'm a DJ myself, I did always take a little bit of a view that these guys are brilliant at what they do, but at the end of the day, they're playing somebody else's music who's put in a lot of work to do that, and that's what kind of interests me. So I wrote off to hundreds and hundreds of recording studios to try and get a job or an in, or just a way in, and eventually I got a job at a studio in London's West End in Carnaby Street, which is an amazing place to work, and it was for a company called Mikasso, and they specialised in doing music for TV and music for films. And I started there as a T-boy, and as I worked there as a T-boy, they trained me how to become a K-pop. And in those days, a K-pop was someone that used to work with the lead sound engineer, and the sound engineer would say, "You can change the tape on that over there, and plug in the multi-track here and patch up some effects there for me," which is actually the best way you could learn by far. So I was learning from guys that had been engineering and working on good, great stuff for years. It was totally experienced. Then I became the engineer there. I progressed and I became the engineer there. Now my boss there at that time, a guy called Toby Jarvis, was a guy who used to go clubbing. And he used to go to this club, a club called Turnmills in the UK, called Trade. And one day he said to me, "Come on, I'll take you along." He was a gay guy, he was my boss there. He said, "I'll take you along and see what you think of the music down here." And I've been used to going to hardcore raves and stuff like that. And he took me to this club, and I went in and I saw this DJ, Tony DeVee, play alongside people like E&M and Pete Warne, Tall Paul at the time, the Sharp Boys. And I just was absolutely blown away by the music. I just couldn't believe how good the music was. And I think you have to think at this time, in the charts in the UK and dance music in the UK was really quite commercial. You'd have a lot of things like Living Joy, Dreamer in the charts and all that kind of stuff. And you walk into this basement in London, and in there was Are You Ready being played at 150 BPM, just like a totally, totally different world. I was totally hooked. I basically started going clubbing there every week. And I think I probably went to Trade every week for about between 5 and 10 years, religiously, every Sunday morning. The studio that I worked at, in the evenings, they allowed me to go back and start making, you know, use the facilities there to make my own stuff. So I started making tracks that I thought my favourite DJs would play at Trade. so I'd make them up, and in those days, you'd then have to save a bit of money and go and get it printed on an acetate, or what they call a dub plate, which is a record you can only play, you know, about 20 times before it wears out. It's like a test. And I'd take them down to the guys at trade. I'd take them down to Tony, and I'd take them down to Pete and Ian, you know, hats to those guys. They would give me genuine feedback. No, this isn't good enough to play yet. Then, you know, after two or three attempts of this, took one down, it got played. Amazing. I thought that was it. I thought that was as far as I could reach in my career. And then gradually, it got more and more. And I was working on a label called Friction Burns, doing some stuff called Razor Babes and Sister Suck. And I had a million different aliases. And gradually at trade, they'd start to play more and more. And then I hooked up with a guy called Peter Pritchard, who was the guy that was the business guy behind Nucleus. And I was doing some engineering work for him on the side. And he realised that the stuff that I was making by myself and I was putting out with my friends, Friction Burns, was selling more than what they were actually doing in-house at Media Records at the time. So he got me in to start this, and then he gave me a series of EPs to start working on, which were called the Heartbeat EPs, which I started to work on for those guys. And that's really how I got into doing hard house and hard dance full time.
Can you remember what that very first one was that E&M and those guys played?
It would have probably been one of the early... I know Tony DeVee played a track that I did called, believe it or not, BK Double Whopper, which was a very rare track to find now. But the things that he really supported, and I mean like played and caned in clubs everywhere, was the early Razor Babe stuff on a label called Friction Burns, and another track called Sister Suck, Gotta Get It Up, which he put on his Live in Tel Aviv album, I believe. And then from then, he just was supporting and supporting stuff that we were doing. It just grew from there, really.
So a lot of your early releases were in the kind of late 90s. About 1997, I think, was when Double Whopper first saw the light of day on, is it Super Records?
That's right. Yeah, it was Super Records. That's right. And I think next year means that I've actually been doing it 20 years now.
Now, you created a certain alias, and that alias, in my opinion, kind of launched you into the realm of almost superstardom when it came to the harder edge of music. That alias, of course, was Cortina.
Cortina was while I was already working at Media Records, doing engineering and doing the Heartbeat EPs, etc. And there was a vocalist there called Anne-Marie Smith, who's the vocalist that sang on that Tony DeVee record, Hooks. That's a sample of her, and she sang on all the Media Records catalogue. And at the time, I was doing lots and lots of BK stuff. So almost too much to continue to release. So I needed to look for a couple of aliases to release some other music. And believe it or not, Cortina is actually myself. And it was named after a car in England called the Ford Cortina, which is, we call them Chavs in English. I think you call them Bogans over there, which is a really, at the time, was a really naff car that a Bogan would drive. And it was just sort of an in-joke at the office, because I had one called Cortina and one called Astra, which was also another Ford car. It was an in-joke in the office. So that's what they were named after. So yeah, Cortina was done, and we did the track Music Is Moving, which was, a massive, massive track. A little bit of a game changer, because it leaked out of the hard house scene. Lots of people were playing it from all different genres.
Can you walk us just through a little bit more on Music Is Moving? Where did the idea to use the Fargetter samples come from?
Media Records, who were part of Nucleus, it was part of their back catalogue. So all those big diva house records from the 90s in Italy were part of Media Records' back catalogue, which I had access to. And also having the singer available, the same singer available to me, and there it was easy to re-record things, redo things.
So, in particular, out of all the stuff you could have picked from the Media Records, what drew you to Fargetta? Was it just simply because it was a great track?
It was a track in those days. So the original had been supported down in very early trade parties. Before Trade Was Trade, I believe it was called Troll, and Tony was playing, you know, in the early 90s. That would have been a record that worked within that genre already. You know, it was already pre-hard house. The original mixes were being played by the people who then progressed themselves into making hard house. So it was a natural choice, and it was just a great record.
Moving on to your days at Nucleus, how many records do you think that you have produced for Nucleus?
Do you know what? I couldn't say. I at least do one or two every week for the last 20 years. So you can work that maths out yourself. I don't know what that would come to. And that's not including remixes, you know. So in those days, I was doing, you know, original stuff in the day and remixes in the evening. It was just constant.
Out of that massive body of work, which ones do you keep coming back to and go, wow, that was such a really, really good tune that I wrote, this particular one? Are there any certain titles that make you feel that way?
Do you know what? It chops and changes depending on what mood I'm in. I mean, the ones, you obviously get asked for a lot of ones all the time. You get asked for Revolution, for Cortina, for a couple of the records we talked about all the time. But I quite like, there's a record called Step Away and a record called Face Facts, which I did with Andy Farley, which are more mixing tools, techno grooves. And that marked for me a little bit of a change in how I worked. I'd changed equipment. I'd moved on to another door then, which moved on to Logic instead of using the MPC-60s. And they were kind of the first, in the first run of tracks that I'd done on a computer, basically. So they're a little stepping stone in my production history. And they're just something that's a little bit different, and I think they remain a little bit timeless.
Now, you also helped engineer a lot of the stuff on Nucleus as well. So you managed to work with a lot of great producers and other DJs as well. Who are some of your favourite people to work with?
I mean, I anything on Nucleus Blue, 99.9% of it. I think this engineer, I co-wrote and co-produced with these guys. Again, at the time, if I'd have put the name BK on everything, it would have been a BK overload for everyone. So on some things, like I co-wrote Concentrate with Andy Farley, I co-wrote and co-produced that track, Bring It Back, all Andy Farley stuff that was on there, or Lisa Pinups, Fergie. But, you know, everyone has a different way of working. I enjoyed working with all those guys, but I think Farley is someone that I have an affinity to work with, and still 20 years on, we can come back in the studio and have great fun. Fergie, who I really enjoyed working with, in fact, working with again now on various projects. So from the Nucleus days, probably, of course, I worked with Nick Sengent, did some of his stuff for him. So probably from the Nucleus days, loads of people, and I really enjoyed working with them all.
In the year 2004, you kind of broke away from Nucleus, and you took, you and Ed Reel, who at the time was the A&R manager for Nucleus.
He was the A&R manager. He was the guy, you know, I'd give him a bat, and he'd make it come out. So I'd go off and write the tunes and go, here you are, Ed, here's the next release. And he would do, you know, he would make it happen. He'd get all the PR sorted, he'd get the record mastered, get it printed, get it distributed, and do all that kind of stuff.
What was the set of actions that led to breaking off from Nucleus and starting the record label Riot Recordings, which I believe was you and Ed Reel?
That's right, yeah. We just, you know, it was time to do our own thing. the club night was doing really well, that we had a club night in the UK, Ankle Riot, which ran at the end, that I think was voted Mix Mag's Club of the Year a couple of years in a row, and it was packed every week, and everything was going well. It was just time to go and do our own thing, really. I get itchy feet every few years and feel like I have to do something new and move on. It's just, I think all creative people are like that. You just think, right, it's time to pass is new. So I've been working on the Slam label recently, again, because we have a night called Slam. And I just recently did a Collaborations 2 album, which was released on Slam.
And predominantly, what is Slam? Because you've done sort of that classic hard house sound, and then you got into the more kind of techno-y sort of sounds, and then the classic sort of sound has started coming back a little bit.
Well, they have, yeah. I mean, that it's kind of led by what's going down well on the dance floor, to be honest. There's a period where we did the techie stuff, which was working really well, and that would work more better with international gigs that weren't so well into the UK sound. But lately, it's just what's been working on the dance floor is modern versions of not bootlegs or copying old tracks, but using UK hard house sound, but UK hard house sound for 2015-16. You know, it's a new version of the hard house. People have done a lot of stuff where they've done used a lot of the EDM sounds and all that, and it hasn't really taken off. There's a couple of niche DJs that play it that have been successful, but it didn't really take off. And what people want here is that traditional UK hard house sound.
And you just mentioned there regarding, you know, other styles have become kind of more popular, and so they get influenced into the music that you're kind of making. Where do you think kind of the UK hard house sound is at the moment? And where do you think it's kind of heading in the next couple of years?
Well, I think it's realised that, you know, personally to me, I don't think there's any point in listening to what is big in the world and making a harder version of it. I think that's a very lazy way forward for any sort of genre, because essentially you're listening to what somebody else is doing, going, well, that's massive, I'll just speed it up and put a harder kick behind it. And the reality of it is, what you do will never be as good as the original people making that sound. So UK at the moment for me is very much finding and having its own UK hard house sound again, which means we're not listening to a laid back loop track and trying to make a version of that at 150 BPM. We're creating and having our own UK sound, just like the UK did with dubstep and drum and bass and the original hard house sound, garage, and export that sound across the world. This is what we're kind of doing again now with the UK hard house sound. And it has a lot of similarities to the original sounds, just like modern drum and bass has original similarities to its original sound. But it's moved forward. The production quality is a whole lot better. The arrangements are more modern, all this kind of stuff.
Outside of the UK hard house, you have kind of dabbled a little bit as Black Russian into the more kind of electro house sort of sounds. Is that something that you're still interested in or have been dabbling in maybe under different names?
Sometimes as a producer, you just do stuff for fun and it comes out all right. So you find a route for releasing it. I did a lot of stuff over the last few years as an act called Hot City, just completely separate from hard house, and you know that took me working with Bernard Sumner from New Order and working with Hot Chip, remixing Robin, remixing, you know, loads of people. You know, we were sponsored by Converse for a year and travelled the world, and great, absolutely brilliant experience. It's part of your journey as a musician and as a producer to want to go off and explore different genres and stuff like that. I think it's the same. I was trying to explain it. It's the same with anyone. You know, if you do the same thing every day, you're going to get bored of it. And if you get bored of it, you're going to get sloppy with it. So the only way to keep yourself fresh and on the ball and learning new stuff is to go off and explore other things for a little bit And if you work in different genres, sometimes you can learn stuff and then bring that back to what you do and add it into the mix.
You've had the privilege to travel, you know, most parts of the world. How many times do you think you've been to New Zealand?
Do you know what? I've probably lost count. It's got to be at least 10 times, I think. I should imagine. I mean, I can think of at least 4 or 5 now, and they're just the ones I can remember. But, yeah, I mean, I started back at doing... when I used to do the Future Music Tours in Australia, coming over for Slinky Tours, coming over for some of the smaller independent clubs as well. I've been now doing this for nearly 20 years, so I've at least been there 10 times. And every time you go there, it's brilliant, especially the London Hard House reunion parties.
Which brings me to that. How many times have you come and played for the London Hard House?
I think this is going to be my third time back for these guys. I think I've only missed maybe one or possibly two. It is one of the best parties to do, one of my favourite parties in the world. It's completely random there. The atmosphere is amazing. But it's also great to bump into a load of friends that were originally partying here in London, or I've met before when I've come to play to New Zealand. It's just where everybody gets together to have it again, you know?
And this particular time around, what's the game plan for BK for your set for the London Hard House Reunion 2015?
Do you know what? I tend to play it by ear. I see what the guys played before me. I'm pulling out some really big tunes that maybe aren't so obvious this time. But also to give people, you know, what they want. The messages that I'm having come through on Facebook, etc., you know, the amount of times I've been asked to play Revolution and Badass and Music Is Moving, all those classics and hard beats will be included, you know, remixes that I did, like And the Drum Machine, all that kind of stuff will be in there. But there's a few little hidden gems in there as well, which I'll keep secret till the night.
Because you do have such a huge body of work, it's quite intimidating if you're a support DJ or one of these other guys to not play a BK track. So for them, for the other DJs, for the other supporting guys, for the other London Hard House guys that are playing on there, are there any specific tracks that you're like, you know what, you can play this one because I've got other ones?
Do you know what? I don't know all the time, but yeah, I get told that all the time. What am I going to play? If I'm playing before or playing after? If I can't play one of your tracks, I notice it. But they're doing a USB key for the London Hard House reunion, which has got amazing DJ mixes from all the DJs playing, etc. And when I was looking through the track, I was one of the last to get my mix done because I was just really busy. And I was looking through the track list of everyone else's, and you know, each track list had 2 or 3 things of mine on there, and I'm thinking, well, God, I can't play that now. I can't play that. So, it's a compliment, isn't it?
It's an absolute huge compliment. You know, to be one of those particular guys that has stamped their mark. You kind of always know that there's a, you know, a BK track. And if you're a hard house DJ, even if you're a club DJ, you own BK tunes. It's incredible that you know, the amount and impact that you have had in that last 20 years. So thank you very much for producing those tunes and giving us all kind of those memories.
Thank you.
Out of all your back catalogue, and I don't know the legalities if you actually are able to do this, if you own the music or Nucleus owns the music, but do you have any plans to update some of those older records and release them as 2015 mixes?
I'll be honest, not really. I kind of like to move on. Not only would it be quite hard to do because they were all recorded on a format and things on floppy disk back in those days, so they... You know, although I do have the samples and stuff and some of them, it could be done. I just think some things are better just left alone. And also, when you've made a record and you think you've done your best job possible with that record, it's quite hard to go back to it. If someone else did it, then great. But for me, I kind of feel like I've done it. They're made. Job done. Move on to the next thing.
Something else that I'm sure a lot of people would like to know as well. Tony DeVitt, basically considered kind of the godfather of Hard House. What were your thoughts on meeting Tony DeVitt and obviously Tony giving you a little bit of mentoring on the records, you know, giving you feedback on them?
Exactly what you just said. He's the godfather of Hard House. He's an absolute pioneer. But as were all those DJs down at Trade at the time, by the way. Tony was amazing. He was probably the most successful out of all of them that spread the sound, took the sound out of Trade dance floor and took it to, you know, the straight scene clubs like Sunday Central, etc., like that. I mean, he was, you know, amazing. Completely different level from what other DJs were doing at that time. And the love that he had then, you know, you'd watch him come on and the dance floor be packed within seconds. And again, but also really the humble, nice guy that would offer you the time of day and offer you some advice and all this kind of stuff. Just before Tony passed away, I was just due to have a record signed onto his label. BK, a record called BK, God the Devil, that he was going to do a remix of. So that I'd worked up over the years, and that was you know, what was going to be a real achievement for me. And, you know, what can you say? The man's a legend.
Brilliant. Done. Thank you very, very much.
All right, mate. Thank you for having me.
Cheers.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
The first ever electronic music show on Howrekkie. This is In It For The Kicks. 10 till midnight, Friday nights. Radio Howrekkie.